listening to the Norfolk Chambers of Commerce podcast. We're connecting voices right across Norfolk.
Welcome to the Norfolk Chambers podcast. I'm your host, Hayes Carver, and in today's podcast, I'm chatting with Neil Foley of Business Growth Club. Thank you so much, Neil, for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Looking forward to it.
So let's start with the Business Growth Club. Mm-hmm. You've run your own business for over 26 years, so you understand all the trials and tribulations, as you say, that businesses go through. Could you just tell us a little about how you got started?
I'd always been advising small business owners and micro businesses in particular in my previous business that I had. And then when I sold that in 2012, it's been around 2012, I wanted to stay in that sector. And it struck me that actually I'd learned a lot over the time, and so therefore why not just try and put some materials together, see who's interested in trying to help the micro business sector in particular. It's a sector that's particularly unloved, partly because there's no money in it, because you know, normally they're relatively small businesses that are trying to get going, and people tend to aim for bigger businesses, and people are always juggling so many different balls. So they're, you know, the Edward de Bono bit, they've got loads of different hats on, and sales and marketing can be right low down the list, even though they know they should do it, but actually they're often better off doing something else, or the thing they are.
Well, I guess they probably don't have anyone to do that. If it's a one-man band at the beginning,
no,
that's
absolutely
the hardest thing to do everything.
Yeah, and that's like the e-myth, isn't it? It's all of that stuff about actually you need to do it, and you need to have separate departments, even if it's you, but this is now my time. Say Edward de Bono did that probably 40, 50 years ago, where he's saying, actually, I need to change my hat and I'm now in this mode. It's quite difficult for small business owners to do that when you're juggling something, or something, an emergency happens, or a new client appears on the horizon, which is, you know, exciting. So that's where the Business Growth Club came from. And it was trying to just come up with lots of different materials that people would use. So we used to do lots of physical meetings. Don't do those quite so much now. I suppose COVID put paid to that. So then just created lots of material that people could use, trying to keep it, so it's not academic in any way, shape or form, it's practical stuff to say, these are the, you know, there's a few key things that everybody needs to do, this is how you do them. That's where the Business Growth Club came from.
And they're all free to access, aren't they, your videos?
They are. I mean, I spent a lot of money creating it all. I've now got busy doing lots of other different things, and it is a sector I'm passionate about. And I don't particularly need the money, so I thought,
that's
well,
nice.
Well, I mean, what do you want money for? I mean, there's a limit to, I'm not saying I'm wealthy, I'm not, but you just think actually, you measure wealth in the quality of life, you don't measure wealth in terms of money. So I thought, well, why not just throw it out there and see who wants to use it? So you've got a mixture of videos and then workbooks that you would work through. So they're trying to ask you open questions, saying, now you understand this bit, it's been explained. How do you apply that to you? I mean, what are the key things you're going to do and when you're going to do them? And we've had some amazing success stories. Some of the feedback is tremendous. A lot of people don't use them. I think some people just like the videos. Oh, do you think so?
Yeah,
I did those
on
with
Norfolk Knowledge Hub.
Yeah,
excellent.
Good.
There's so many different titles, so much content on there. That's really
tons.
Good.
I did those with a fella called Ola from Just Another Label, and we recorded those in his studio, which actually is an old shipping container. In the freezing cold, trying to get the continuity right, and just trying to get them so they're short and sweet, that they're not too long. But the content is entirely relevant.
And I think keeping them short, people, as you say, like a micro business, they don't have a lot of time.
No, they're too complicated.
Yeah.
If you think about most courses, most people online courses, nobody quite knows what the stats are, but I would guess 95% never finish. And we know in terms of with books that the almost the majority of people don't finish books, never mind something online. So you need to keep it relatively short and sweet to try and think, well, what's the one message I want to get over? So hopefully they will.
Well, we often don't read on the way to work anymore because we're hybrid working and everything. And
yeah.
I think it's interesting that you said about businesses, you know, needing lots of money. I think since pandemic, many people think, I want to work this hard anymore. I want that work-life balance.
Definitely.
Which, again, is a challenge for small businesses, because if you've got a team that want that work-life balance, how do you figure that out with still trying to keep your customers happy?
I think that's a dilemma that almost every business is struggling with. When you look at the stats of people wanting to work from home, they want the hybrid. recruitment has changed. There's a, you know, X hundred thousand people over 50 in particular who've exited the workplace altogether. You've got others with long COVID, and you've got others saying, I want a work-life balance. I know from my own personal experiences working with businesses where we would have stuck an advert, we would be lazy and stuck an advert on Indeed, paid a little bit of money. Indeed will tell you, there was one I did about 3 weeks ago for somebody where Indeed was saying the budget could be, I think it was £9 a week, so relatively low budget. They estimated you'd get 49 responses. So that's their algorithm telling them, historically, for this job, that's what you get. We've got about four. The people just aren't there.
Well, we've got the lowest unemployment rates for many years. Where is everybody?
But every country's the same. When you look at the, you know, the States is the same. Throughout Europe, it's the same. I guess it's an ageing population. I was reading something, Private Eye, where before I came here today, talking about some of the COVID stats. And it's skewed slightly because of the ageing population we've got. And it's easy to forget how rapidly we're all getting older, and there aren't the younger people coming through. So maybe that's that. And that's why people talk about immigration being quite a good thing.
Yeah.
Because actually there are some problems down the road here with an ageing population and a shrinking working population.
Yeah, and I guess with millennials or people of the next generation want these different things. They want to work for businesses who are sustainable.
Yeah.
They want to work for B Corp companies. They just want so much more.
Yeah.
And that's a lot for a small business to have to deal with.
It's a lot to absorb, isn't it?
It is a lot to absorb. And actually, how do you even process that when you're trying to even look at your marketing? Or
yeah, and you're worried about your VAT bill. Yeah. Thinking, crikey, I haven't put that aside. But the world has changed, isn't it? People rent equipment, materials, you know, phones. Lots of younger people don't bother learning to drive anymore.
Yeah.
I guess if you lived in a big city, why would you bother?
Well, there was something I was reading about nomad employees. So people who are just, they don't work in the office, they could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, the pandemic has shown us that, well, I don't need to commute, I don't need to do this, so why should I?
No. The only downside, isn't it, is, you mentioned it earlier, is the lack of the time. When I used to do a lot of driving, I would always listen to audiobooks or podcasts, and now I don't. And I miss it, but it's not the same, because I have to, it sounds like you can drive and listen to an audiobook.
Maybe I'm sure asleep.
That's not good either. But you wouldn't do it, listening to audiobooks at home is much harder, isn't it?
It is, because you need to be walking or
you need to
running
be doing
or
something,
doing something else.
Yeah.
It's something to have on in the background, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Otherwise you're just kind of like looking at the wall thinking that needs a place.
Yes. Or somebody interrupts you, just at a crucial bit. So there are some changes. But, I mean, we're in challenging times. We've probably always been in challenging times, though.
Well, I was going to ask you, before the pandemic, what were the biggest challenges that businesses had that you had supported and helped them through?
That's a good question. I guess trying to get their message across as to what makes them different. Every business likes to think it is different. I mean, nothing's unique. I mean, and if you have something unique, you won't have it unique for very long, because somebody will nick it. So it's trying to get over what makes you different and trying to have the confidence to charge what you should charge for your services, because people frequently undersell themselves, in particular in the micro sector. Being very clear as to who your market is. I think a lot of people don't do that. I spoke to some lady the other day.
And that's such a simple, fundamental thing.
It is, but the trouble is when you're new or small, you think, I need work. I don't care where it comes from. I need business. I need somebody to pay me for something. So the temptation is saying, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. What do you need? Whatever it is, the temptation is to say yes and then work it out afterwards. There is some logic to that in terms of, otherwise we never do anything risky, do they? But you're better off saying, you know, what sector can I really apply myself to? And the other thing that comes along is that I've often... Somebody told me this a long time ago in terms of there's a market for hot tea, because that's what we drink in gallons of. Rather bizarrely, there's a market for iced tea, which I would never have dreamed of. And the temptation is in business, isn't it, is to think there's a gap in the market here. What about tepid, lukewarm tea? But there must be, there's a gap in the market. And people talk about gaps in the market, but actually it's the wrong question, really. It's more a question, is there a market in the gap? Is there anything sustainable? Would people drink it? I don't need lots of people to drink it, but is there enough people to drink it? And can I reach them? Because how do I know who these people are and where do I find them? Or if they're looking, where are they looking so that I can suddenly pop
it's
up and
tell them? It's that research, isn't it, you've got to do.
Yeah, and that's all the target marketing.
Yeah, and I think if you're selling hot tea, aren't you effectively also selling iced tea? Because when it gets cold, you're not wasting your product. You're just...
Oh, it could be, although iced tea tends to have lots of sugar in it.
Shut the sugar in,
yeah.
Let it go cold.
Yeah, I mean, but who'd have thought it was...
It's that research, isn't it? And it's, I guess it's people don't know where to start.
Yeah, and then... And I suppose the other thing, big thing you tell people is... Don't try and be creative. You don't need to be creative.
If you're not.
No, if you are creative, fantastic. Mm. And if you are creative in business, it helps. But you don't need it. It struck me that in the Times the last few weeks, there's been full-page adverts of it's a company I've never heard of. They had one in the Sunday Times. Full-page colour advert. I have no frigging idea what that product is. And you just think, that's insane. But some marketing agency or advertising agency has come up with something really creative. Somebody's bought it and thought, that's brilliant, that's fantastic. And it will be a big agency that's done this. And you think that's brilliant. But actually, that's complete and utter nonsense, isn't it? How can I look at something? Because I'm interested in this sort of thing. I look at it. I look at the picture, which is of some smug bloke. And you think, okay, I don't know what that tells me, other than that I hope I'm not like him. But you then read the words, and even then you think, I don't know what any of that means. Small business, if you haven't got the money for that, they'll say they're building a brand.
Well, it's skill, isn't it? If you're a big company, you're a big aftershave or whatever you
They've just been conned.
They've been conned.
Whereas as a small business, you need to sell something. If I spend X, I need to get Y.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have to get Y immediately, so you can look at the long-term value of a client or the lifetime value of a client, which you know seems to be ignored by so many people. So I don't need to make money immediately. I'll even make a loss on it, potentially, as long as there's repeat sales. But I need a return. I need something to happen. And so much marketing and advertising doesn't seem to have that. There's no call to action. There's no benefits. There's no reasons why. There's none of the core stuff that would make you think, these people I need. I've got that problem that they're talking about. I need to go and solve it. And I need to have a conversation with them somewhere or another. So to have this, and I think that's a big one for businesses. Mm. So don't be creative. Just say it as it is.
Well, if you're selling to somebody, the people you're selling to as a small business are probably as short on time as you, so they want the facts straight, they want to see, yes, I get this for that price. Those bigger, crazy ads, they're for people who have lots of time and money and just think, that's beautiful, maybe I'll look at it.
But I also think, I mean, I don't want to be overly critical of advertising agencies, but advertising agencies often, if you're looking at the big boys, the really big boys, I'm not talking about some of the small stuff, they're not judged on how much they've sold or return on investment. They're judged on awards.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, yeah, where actually what I want is I'm going to spend $5,000 with somebody. What I need is $5,000 back or $3,000, but long term I need 20. And that's what I'll judge it on. And if, because, you know, the same ways that you might use online marketing, if I spend X and get Y, that's tremendous as long as I know what it is. So if you're telling me if I spend $10,000, I get 50. Does that mean if I can borrow another 10 and spend 20, do I get 100? In which case, I'll do that.
Yeah.
So that's what smaller businesses get tied up in building brands, and I need my logo right, and things that actually make no difference whatsoever.
Well, we were talking in a recent podcast about personal branding. Mm. We did a Conex event on personal branding. So
right.
You work for a big business, a big legal firm,
yeah.
And it's about what is your personal brand,
mm.
Which is tricky because you're actually
yeah.
representing that business, and it's a minefield, but it's that I would think I represent the company. My personal brand is my personality, is what it is.
Mm.
Whereas I think the next generation coming up, it's about... That's that nomad way of
thinking. Yeah, it's different altogether. Yeah, I think, and I suppose for a long time, you don't own people, do you?
No.
And you're just going to hopefully work with people and get some value out of them whilst they're with you, and then expect them to move on and then their career. We talk about people having multiple careers now rather than saying, well, I'm going to be an X,
yeah.
And that's what I'm going to be. You know, lifetime learning and all the rest of it. In many ways, that should help. Because you're getting more rounded people, and it's just getting the contract right, isn't it? That I expect that you're not going to be here forever, but while you're here, can we do X?
I guess it's that HR side, and that's where HR gets trickier going forward, because if you've got lots of people doing side hustle jobs,
yeah,
that's great, because you're getting lots of experience from them, and they're loving their job, and they move on when it's right for them or when it's right for you, and you're just constantly having... movement and life and change, which is good, and I think that is the way it's going to one of those, I work for a bank and I got a clock after 30 years.
Yes, no, that's those days are gone, aren't they? But it is a perennial problem that small employers have with staff. And I think that every business says the same thing. Maybe their expectations are too high. They're not going to work the hours that you work, because why would they? So it is tricky with staff.
And I think there's a whole host of challenges now facing businesses this year. So one of them is like supply chains and rising costs. How do you as a small business absorb those costs without alienating your customers? But I guess everybody is in the same boat. So all the prices are going up at the same time. It's not I'm being undercut.
No. And most of the time, small business owners are too reluctant to increase prices. They should be increasing prices every year, because you need to stand still. At least at the moment, everybody's talking about inflation and everybody knows the supply chain issues and problems with raw materials and fuel and the rest. So you're pushing more on an open door at the moment by saying, look, I need X, Y, Z. I think the people who are in problems are people with fixed price contracts. And that's why the building trade is in particular problems. Mm. So you hear that time and again. And whatever contract, especially if you're a small company, I work with various businesses who've got, you know, working with very big companies. So the contracts aren't negotiable. They're saying, this is our contract. If you don't want it, then don't do business with us. But normally within there will be something about price increases. You don't want to be in a 3 or 5 year contract on a fixed price. There needs to be some mechanism to increase prices along the way. And I think people are open to that.
Yeah. And that must happen a lot in construction, where you agree your fixed price for the build, and then it's gone up.
Timber, cement, plaster, and all these sort of issues that we've had during COVID, which I don't think have necessarily gone away. And there's also a lot of profiteering along the way, isn't there? Where people are squeezing and thinking, well, how, what sort of margins can I get out of here? That's certainly true when you look at some of the stats in the US, where some of the profitability, some of the big companies, is at record highs. So it feels like they're under pressure, and they'll say they are, but actually they're just milking it, seeing what you do.
So with the challenges that people are facing, is there any sector that you've seen that has really had a huge amount of success?
I work with a pest control company. I work very strongly, very closely with a pest control company. They've had a fantastic...
Have they?
Pests don't go away. They were key workers, so they kept working. But they just kept going, doing things as professionally as they possibly could, and punching above their weight. And that, in most, I suppose, there's a lesson there for all of us in the sense of think big, so they act like a big company. They're not a particularly big company, but they act like a big company. And just try and deliver. And that's probably what all of us ever want, isn't it? I mean, I always find bizarre in terms of phone companies. We change phone companies. Normally because they pee you off, because they try and treat you differently than as an existing customer than a new customer, and that's enough to make you think, hang on a second, I've shown you some loyalty. I mean, and all the big phone companies do it, they have this funnel, don't they, where as long as I get more at the top than coming out of the bottom, then I've got good business.
That's such a bad way to
think.
That's
insane.
It's insane.
You think, why don't you just try and stop the hemorrhage, and then you don't need so many people on the top, which cost you a fortune to acquire, whereas these existing people are with you already.
You're retaining your good business name. By not being so awful.
Yes, you see that with companies like Virgin Media, which a good company in lots of ways, but everybody says that their customer service is appalling.
We've actually just negotiated £50 off our bill because we said we'd leave.
Yep.
And we were like, why didn't we do this? Why didn't you offer this to us a year ago?
It's so annoying.
I'll take that bit out.
But it is so annoying.
It is. But you said earlier, and it's so true, about all businesses, you know, there's no kind of unique...
No.
There isn't, but actually what it comes down to is the relationships that you have with people, and especially like with networking, there may be 5 different printers in the room, but you'll know the guy that you love or the woman that you think is, I really respect you and like you, you'll get the work.
Yep. Somebody who went the extra mile, somebody who responded quickly. I mean, it is staggering, isn't it, in today's age, if you make an inquiry, how difficult it sometimes is to get through to somebody.
Well, you don't speak to somebody.
Or they don't phone you back, or they'll say... You know, you get one. I saw a great email response the other day. So out of office is fine, get that, so I know you're away. The two I saw within the last week, which are fantastic for how not to do things. One said, I'm just back from holiday, so I'm very busy. I thought that was
lovely.
But the even better one was, I've got your email, I'll respond to it according to the priority that I give it. I thought, wow, that's fantastic. That was from the council.
I was going to say, was that from the government?
Yes. Wasn't that brilliant? So in other words, if I don't hear from you, you're not that important to me. You're a little bit of a minnow. And you're thinking, wow.
Why does, especially for a sector like that, where you are serving people, why is service so far removed from the actual role that you should be doing?
Very odd, isn't it?
And
I suppose it's just the culture, and it got into the mindset. Somebody thought that was a great email to send out. And you think, goodness me. And indeed, I haven't heard back from it. So it's that it clearly wasn't important in the slightest.
It's such an un-British way to respond, isn't it?
Very odd. But we all learn from that as business. What most of us want, if somebody reaches out to us, respond. Even if you say, I can't do anything today, but I promise I'll come back to you tomorrow morning. At least I know it's dealt with.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in particular, if it's a new business inquiry, if I'm on Google or whatever, does that mean I need to speak to somebody else then? Because you haven't run me back. I've only got one line. You know, going to ring
I think
back
it's just about
page.
Being transparent, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're busy, just say, look, we are really busy at the moment. We've heard you.
Yeah,
we'll
be
in
back.
Touch. Yeah.
It's a bit like a friend of mine was hanging on for 50 minutes to get through to an insurance company or an insurance claim, and they kept saying the call was important. And you know, that's really great. So you'd be better off changing the message to say, look, I'm really sorry, but we're a bit swamped at the moment. It wasn't what we expected.
Please bear with us.
Bear with us, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Rather than your call is important to us, which clearly is, isn't it?
No, it isn't. Mm. Or else get more people to answer the phones.
Yeah,
because there's loads of people looking out there.
And you can outsource that easy enough if you want to. Just
yeah.
Even if somebody says, look, I'm just a triage, I'm sorry, I can't answer your query, but somebody will call you back. Anything other than 50 minutes listening to the same message.
So when the basic pest control people came to you, what situation were they in?
They were looking to grow. They wanted growth, weren't sure entirely how to do it. They'd been doing very well, but weren't sure how to do it. I spent a fair bit of time talking to them and then think, actually what we need to do is go out and buy some other companies. Why don't we go and buy market share, buy some other companies, which is what we've done. So we bought two others. And it's been about that managing that process and helping embed them in and the rest of it, but that's worked brilliantly.
And is that something they wouldn't have thought about necessarily themselves? Because I guess you get quite insular, don't you, within your business?
Yeah. I think they would have struggled to do it themselves. They would have thought of it, clearly, and if the right opportunity came along. But we went out and looked for it. So we went out and sourced it. And I think whether they'd have had the confidence to do it, because it's a risky thing to do. But actually it's worked very well in two different scenarios. So it's worked very well. But I don't think they would have done it on their own. And sometimes that's all it is you're holding people's hands and giving them a sounding board. And I don't know anything unique at all. It's just common sense.
Yeah.
It's the only thing. The only advantage of getting old, isn't it? You just learn more. Then after a while, you start to forget it and drift into senility. But at the moment, I've
drifting into senility.
Well, I think gradually.
Yeah.
But actually, you just because. 65 now, so the reality is I've been working in this sector for forever. There isn't a lot you haven't seen. The recessions have, lost my first job in the 3-day week in the 70s, so you've lived through all this stuff and learned to take some of it with a pinch of salt and think, well, I can't worry about what the rest of the world does, all I can worry about is what I do.
Yeah, and I guess we haven't had anything as big as that 3-day week in the 70s up until 2020.
No.
Were you really impressed with how many businesses pivoted? And that's almost like a swear word now, isn't it? Pivot. The pandemic did bring out some people who had incredible success.
Yeah, I think the pandemic, people either got very frightened in the headlines, and probably that's because you're listening to the news, which is probably a very bad thing to do.
Yeah.
So I think some people did manage to switch and see the opportunities. As it turns out, when we look nationally, quite a few of them were tow wrecks who just took the NHS for a lot of money and the rest of it. But it did force us to rethink and think, how am I going to do this? And what am I going to do? And entrepreneurs, generally speaking, small business owners, generally speaking, are amazingly resilient.
It is about resilience, isn't
it? Yeah, being
yeah.
Two steps forward, one back, couple sideways, as long as you're going in the right direction. And nothing lasts forever. And whenever the media says we're in the it's absolutely dire, that probably means the worst is over, because they're always historic. And bear in mind, I always remember this, when Clement Attlee was Prime Minister, when he was, bear in mind the election that they did after the Second World War, it took a few days before the results were known, for a start, whereas now everything's instant, you know there's a race to see who can be the first to declare. The media asked Clem, have you got any message for the nation? And there was a pause, and he said, no, not really. We're going to do what we said we're going to do. And in there, and I think in their manifesto, I can't remember the exact number, it was something like they had about 10 points. Whereas now we've got 24-hour news with everywhere, all over the world. So the media are spending all their time trying to think, well, how do I fill this next hour?
Mm.
Well, let's find an expert. Let's find somebody from, you know, X, Y, Z. And none of it is any value at all.
And I think that's the hardest thing, isn't it? It's filtering out the noise.
Just switch it off.
Yeah. One of our initiatives is a Business Climate Leaders Programme. Our aim with that is to filter out the noise and give businesses actually just a clear journey of where to go, because there is so much.
There's tons of it, isn't it? And there is a desperate need for that.
There is.
News used to be, I'll report events, you can then filter them to think according to your experience, political views or whatever. That doesn't happen now. Now you're listening to journalists' views, a viewpoint and take on events. Well, that isn't news, but not in my sense.
But that mirrors where social media is. Everything is about, this is how I feel, this is what I think. Well, I don't sort of care, really, because I don't know you.
Just tell me the facts.
Tell me the facts.
And I'll interpret them.
I can deal with the facts.
So actually, that's why I quite like Private Eye. Because Private Eye should poke fun at the rich and famous. But actually, a lot of the articles are really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were one of the first people to support the post office scandal with Horizon and all that debacle. For years they've been going on about that. They've been very good at during the COVID period. But that's where you might like them. You know, I quite like The Economist. You get that every week because it's biased, because we're all biased. But it's pretty factual. And when you start to draw things, but listening to the news on the radio, you know, my wife will come in and she's been listening in the workshop for. So I mean, she's heard the news probably 8 times in the day. Oh God, no wonder you're depressed. Don't listen to it.
But when you're just hearing that same thing, it is hard to filter it out.
Oh yeah, you come in, you think it's true.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I don't buy any of that. So I don't listen to the news or watch the news at all, but I do. I read a lot from things like Unheard, Private Eye, The Economist and things like that. And actually then you start to form a view.
So looking forward to 2022, are there certain sectors that you're excited about working with?
I talk to people from all sorts of different, the problems are all the same. Especially if I'm just taking a common sense type approach. I was talking to somebody earlier this week who wanted me to help. Well, they're not in, they're in London. But then it was, their problems are broadly the same. You know, they're doing well, worried about budgets, worried about their salary role, which is quite high when you look at it compared to what it might be. Some big risks. Looking at their exit strategy doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So people always come up with these exit strategies of theirs is 5 million. You're thinking, where did you get the number? Where did you get that figure from?
Where does that come from?
Nice round number that means there's no thought to it at all. I understand 5 million would be nice, but when you get there, I don't really see how that's going to work. So people are the same, although, so it doesn't matter what the sector. And one of the problems in business is business is all about short. There is no long. It's just a series of crises that you work through, and then you look back suddenly and think, well, I've come a reasonable way. But it's just a series of short-term stuff, and I suppose that's one of the problems with, you know, just being environmentally sound and the rest of it.
And I guess that's where your common sense approach comes from, as you said. We didn't think we'd get through lockdown. We didn't think we'd get through it, but we will get through it.
You do get through it, don't you? I mean, you have no choice. That's what is the human condition. But actually, you do get through it. And I think what makes it worse now is social media, 24-hour news, everybody's opinions. And very easy to give up and say, Christ, we're going to hell in a handcart, and we're not. Like global food prices. Reading The Economist recently, global food prices are now at the pre-Ukraine invasion level. So they've dropped for the last 5 months. It's not what you think.
It's
a disaster. We're not going to be able to feed the third world or the developing world. Actually, it isn't true. There used to be a program called Drop the Dead Donkey. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
But the headline was fantastic, because that's exactly what media is, isn't it? At the absence of anything else, let's put something else about some poor donkey being tortured in Spain, which I think was what it was about. So there's always something salacious. There's always something that makes you think, oh my God, the world is awful. Whereas actually,
if we could just talk about CONEX, which is our initiative for supporting under 35s.
Okay.
And it's not just about professionals, it's anybody within a business under 35, whether they are the admin staff or they're answering the phones. If you could go back quite a way, but not too far, to when you were 25, mm-hmm. what would be the best piece of advice you would give yourself about your career and how everything would be?
It might be to take more risk. And probably, when I was 25, I was an employee then, so I was employed till I was 30 odd, before I worked for myself. Probably worry less about other people and just focus more on yourself. Because when I was doing reasonably well, but it was very easy to everything be about in competition rather than just focus on what I do. But I think I would take more risk. I probably should have started out earlier on my own, which was a big risk at the time. I think it would probably be that.
Not only worrying about what people think, you're worrying about what you think people think.
Yes.
Which isn't ever true.
No, it's very true, isn't it? And actually all you can ever influence is what you think. You can't actually influence anything else. You think you might be and you might do, but you've no idea. The only thing that really matters is what you think of yourself. It doesn't really matter. So as long as I've done the right thing, maybe by me, maybe other people didn't pick up on it. And I don't get the credit. Well, but I know. The fact that somebody else has taken the credit can be desperately annoying, but actually they know that I did it. And I know. More importantly, I know. So actually, what other people think is totally irrelevant.
And that's about building integrity in yourself.
And I think that's probably partly the secret to good mental health, isn't it?
Mm.
I think it's just saying, actually, I know I'm all right. I'm all right because I'm true to myself. Or if I've made mistakes, as we all have, well, you didn't. Nothing you can do about them, just try and make sure you don't do them again. So I think it's that being comfortable with who you are is a very important one. The only thing you can influence is how you feel and how you think. It's not how everybody else thinks. And I suppose that's sometimes where very courageous people have stood up and said, actually, but this is how I think. I don't care what you think.
I feel that needs to go on a t-shirt somewhere.
I'm sure it's on already somewhere. It's not an original thought.
So Lossie, I just want to talk to you because you're now one of our new board members.
Mm.
How does it feel to be on the board and what are you looking forward to?
I was sort of humbled to be asked on the board, watched and been a part of the chamber for quite a while with Chris and Novo trying to take it into a different direction. It feels a totally different place than it was mm-hmm. a few years ago. And I think Novo will prove to be a brilliant CEO. So it just feels quite exciting. People are a lot more talented than me, which is fine, but then when something needs to be said or whatever, then hopefully bring it back to earth. I have to mention that one of the best books I've ever read is a book called Parkinson's Law. It was published, I think, in 56 or 55, something like that. It's a fantastic book, written by a fellow called Northcote Parkinson. Very short book. You can get
amazing name.
Brilliant name. You can get, I think he was in the Admiralty, I think, but it's about the proliferation of Jobsworth in the Admiralty, in the forces, but in the civil service and in business generally. And that is a brilliant book as to read to how a board should not work. In my top 10, I read a lot. It will be in my top 10 books of all time. It's a brilliant book. And he tried to replicate it by doing other books afterwards, and they never quite worked. Because all his best ideas were within this one book, which is probably 100 pages, but it was just fantastic. Yeah, They Ask You Answer would be one that springs to mind immediately. Marcus Sheridan, fantastic marketing book. The One-Page Marketing Plan by Alan Dibb is a brilliant book. Anything by Seth Godin is fantastic. The E-Myth E-Myth Revisited, I think, is the latest one, but I mean, that's still a phenomenal book by Michael Gerber. And so there's loads on it. But Parkinson's Law would be in there. That'd be the most fun one to do. One Minute Manager Meets the Monkey is a brilliant book. If anybody's managing anybody, the monkey being you end up with all the problems on your shoulder as the manager, which is not the idea. But some employees are very good at doing that. I've got a problem, could you help? And you end up saying, oh, leave it with me. So the One Minute Manager Meets the Monkey is a very old book. If I say very old, it's probably 30, 40 years. But brilliant. has transformed some people's lives. Marcus Aurelius, great philosopher, you know, 200 AD around. I always carry his book with me. That sounds incredibly moronic. But I mean, I carry it in the sense of I have it in my case so that if I ever stuck somewhere, I can read something. And you read his stuff. And one that always springs to mind is, it says, stop being, because it was written to himself. Mm-hmm. And it says, stop being distracted by things. Just focus on your task. You know, act like a Roman. You think, blimey. And if there were distractions 2,000 years ago, what on earth are there now? So the things have not changed. It's a focus. You know, do you say it to kids, do your blooming homework, just focus on doing stuff.
Just focus on what do you want. Yeah. And that's where you come in.
Well, it's, you try to come in and say, actually, as you say, focus on the important stuff. And this is how, these are the things you should do, and this is how you do it.
Because we all know what we need to do.
Yeah. And classic, in small business sense, the classic would be, I'll get a salesperson. So sales is what we need, but nobody enjoys sales, or very few people do. So, but I know that we need it, so I'll get a salesperson. And it nearly always is a disaster. Because you're trying to abdicate something which is absolutely essential to the business. And the salesperson, in most cases, will do probably quite a poor job. But it will take you many months and a few thousand pounds down the swanny before you realise. Follow a process and a system, but they believe wholeheartedly in what they're doing, and it isn't just a numbers game.
Listen, we can spot a fake Santa.
Oh, yeah,
know,
yeah,
don't you
do.
Neil, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been really, really interesting.
My pleasure, Hayes. Thank you for asking.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to the Norfolk Chamber of Commerce podcast, connecting, supporting, and giving voice to every business in Norfolk.